In terms of the circulated program, welcome back, Honorable Mastori Morutua. We missed you very much in the committee. We are glad that you are back, both of you. Part of the wisdom was not yet, so we are happy that the wisdom is back. What we are going to do, if you look in terms of your agenda, you will see that it's DOC, SABC, and ICASA. But what we propose to do is that we take DOC, ICASA, and then take SABC. So that we have enough time to engage with SABC. But I must indicate that this is a continuation of a meeting which we had last week Friday in Joburg, SABC, pseudo M1, if I'm still correct, where the committee received presentation from NEMISA, ICASA, SABC, and DOC. And we resolved that we'll continue today to engage the presentation, because at the time when we had the presentation, members didn't get the document in time to go through and be able to engage the entities. So today we'll be doing that, the engagement, where it's necessary to engage, but where issues were clear, we'll move on to the other issues. Now, on that discussion, NEMISA also presented, but there was an indication that what NEMISA presented didn't need much follow-up, a clear strategic plan and so on. But the three, SABC, DOC, and ICASA, we thought that they might have a case to answer or issues which members can raise so that they can be able to engage around those particular issues. So as I've indicated, that the program will start with the DOC, ICASA, and then SABC. Members, we have also received a GCIS report which we need to go through and adopt it. We might not do it today. We can adopt it with, in that 30-minute meeting, which we'll have Thursday just to adopt the report. So it's just that you must go through it and see whether it's through reflection and make corrections and amendments wherever you can. Then we'll adopt it together with the SABC one, with the DOC one Thursday. The reason for this is that we want to finalize the report today so that we give members tomorrow the entire day to go through the report. So that in that short meeting we're going to have Thursday, originally we're proposing 9 to 10, just to adopt the report so that members can then go to their caucuses immediately after that, so that we don't interfere with the caucuses at time and so on, and adopt those reports. So I hope we can go straight to the issue around DOC without wasting time. DOC presented around the question of ESA and the eSkill Institute. The other item they presented was the issue around their organogram vis-a-vis the proposed organogram. Members, I'm sure you went through the documents. If there are issues around the DOC matters, those issues can be raised. I know Honorable Rohan had an outstanding question from Friday to ask around the issue of ESA and so on. But she's not here now. I'm sure she's still outside. But members, it's open for the engagement on the DOC presentation for Friday. Do we have the presentation, members, for DOC? No, we can engage on the DOC presentation if there's any issues which you want to raise. Welcome, DM, Deputy Minister. You see, you are sitting at the wrong spot. Or you decided to be in opposition too. We are really honored that in all our engagement, either the Minister or the Deputy Minister has been available. I think it's an honor as a committee that you continue to avail yourself to our engagement, which sometimes is seldomly happening. But we appreciate it. We hope that we are setting a trend which you are not going to agree if you want to reverse it. So we expect that you continue to do that moving forward and so on. Members, it's open for DOC engagement. I will take it that we don't have issues. ANC, DA. Oh, Honorable Drogen.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I just had to leave the room. Last week on Friday, when we had the SABC, some of the questions was not answered from the department relating to the eSkills Institute. I'm not clear on the funding of those institutes. From the department, is it coming from the Department of Communications or the Department of Science and Technology? Maybe they can just clarify that question for me, because our budget will be approved soon, so their budget that we're going to approve, I just need to know who's funding the eSkills Institute. Then secondly, if so, I always take an interest in it. When we visited them on site, I saw a lot of youth being trained and women at that site. And I was with the understanding that the resources is going to different entities and that are going. Where is it going to other entities, and what is then the DOC's take as responsibility towards those resources, towards the ESA Centre? Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members and Deputy Minister and colleagues. The funding for the eSkills Institute, as I've indicated on Friday, is in the process of being operationalised, in the process of being established. The idea is and envisaged that the Institute will become an institution for higher learning in the future. But at the moment, it is being incubated within the organizational structure of the department. So the funding is from the department, and as I've indicated, our current activities is to build networks, academic networks, with universities here in South Africa and overseas, and also to build networks between the ESI and FET colleges. And so we're also in the process of developing eSkills curriculum and be piloting some of these curriculum in communities and also at other institutions. So it's a project at this point in time of the Department of Communications, fully funded by the department, and there is budget for the eSkills Institute.
Dr. Veso, can you respond the same question if you remove the institute and put ESA?
ESA?
Yeah. The same question, but just remove the institute.
Yeah.
The institute and put ESA.
Yeah. DISA is, of course, a directorate in the Department of Communications, fully funded by the department. There are two aspects to the to ISA. The one is space technology, and the other part of ISA is about software development, applications development. We are in discussions with the Department of Science and Technology because, I mean, there is a space authority at the moment, a national space authority. How ISA can either collaborate with that authority or perhaps even move the space component of ISA to the DST. The applications development part, we're going to provide space for that within the ISCOS Institute as part of what we call the Apps Factory, so that we can use that resources to start the Apps Factory idea within the ISCOS Institute.
Honorable Drogen, follow up?
Yes, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you for the DOC and for Mr. Viso's explanation. The budget, will it still be explained to us how it links to the e-skills training? The budget is coming from the department, and also that budget then, will that be also then being allocations to different universities? We just need to know what are we going to approve for the budget.
Yes, the budget for the ISCOS Institute, what we're doing at the moment, we're establishing what we call knowledge production hubs at universities, where we, in collaboration with universities, putting together, you know, parts of the ESI. Now, these knowledge production hubs in future will be developed into faculties of the ESI. If we become a higher institute for higher education, like faculties of the university, but instead of having an institution nationally, we will have a national a core function, but we will deal with the faculties at the provincial and local level where there could be more impact. So in collaboration with universities, we believe that we can train more people. And not, you know, having a national institution that can only deliver on a limited amount of students. We have a budget for universities because from the universities, from that hub, we will also be able at a local level to deal with training in communities. So not everything is done from a national perspective. And that will ensure that we reach more students where they are.
Welcome, Honorable Michael. It has been a while. Honorable Van der Weg.
Thank you, Chairperson. The CEO of DOC touched. Yes, thank you, Chairperson. The DOC acting it touched on a couple of issues I want to raise. If I refer to page 10, there's a lot of things about the Department of Communication, proposed organizational structure and everything, and there's a lot of infrastructure development within the Department of Communication, and I think that is very important. There's radio and satellite communication, broadband, radio frequency spectrum, macro infrastructure applications. My question, Dr. Viso, is in which manner the DOC acts like a conductor of a symphony orchestra and just bring all the components together? Because there's a lot of work being done by universities, private companies, I think, you know, all the cell phone companies, they do a lot of research and development. Do you, as the Department of Communication, make use of all the knowledge? It is there. It's not a question of redevelop the wheel or something, because the work has been done. And just bring it all together to give some structure to the whole communications fraternity in South Africa, and sort of get rid of problems, and, you know, just to give direction and to speed up the delivery on broadband and all of the outstanding issues. You know what that is, to make South Africa a leading country on this whole communications system. Thank you.
That was us.
Yes, Honourable Member, I think there's now, I think for the first time, a concerted effort from the department side to engage with our universities. I think there's a lot of expertise, a lot of research is being done at universities, research and development. That is why there is also an effort from the minister's side to arrange roundtable meetings. Not only with industry, but also roundtable meetings with academia, to ensure that what is being developed there, that we be aware of it, that we engage with the academics, and because I know the kind of work that's being done there, and that is why we have decided not to duplicate universities in South Africa and training, but really to engage with universities so that we can collaborate with them and use existing expertise in the country before we get and get our own expertise. So that is broadly what we're trying to do. Now, within the department needs to deal with policy setting at the national level. It's not being done anywhere else. That's the mandate of the department. There's a lot of work to be done as far as development of strategy is concerned. And in order to develop policy, you have to have internal capacity. But instead of now, and in going into the future, of outsourcing research, because you need to have a good research foundation in order to develop policies, we will engage with universities. I know there are universities, for example, like University of Johannesburg, doing excellent research in connection with cybersecurity. So instead of now outsourcing research, we can first engage with university and say, well, I mean, we want to develop a policy. We need this kind of knowledge in order to develop a policy. What can you deliver? And once we find that our universities are not in a position to deliver on the kind of research that we want, of course, then we have no option but to outsource, or even then to do our own research within the department. But the whole idea is that that we don't want, going into the future, reinvent the wheel. We don't want to duplicate. And we believe that if we can use universities as a resource, because they're government-funded, so there's a lot of expertise there. So you're quite right. I think that is a very serious effort on our side to make sure, and not only our collaboration with universities. I think a lot of research and work is being done by the private sector. And it is also available, either in public documents, or we can engage the private sector in terms of one-on-one and what they can deliver to us. So the scenario going into the future is one of collaboration and participation as a collective in the country, so that we can deliver the best options.
Want to add before we follow up. Maybe the follow-up would help. TM?
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. Yes, we do need that internal capacity, not only for policy as explained, and also strategy, but also to assist in the assessments and the evaluation of what is being done in the country, who is doing what, so that at all given times the ministry is guided in terms of whether there's fulfillment of the objectives as set out by the government itself. There will, from time to time, be situations where industry, for example, does not deploy its investment in certain communities, but it does so in others. So where the market fails, also the these people in the infrastructure area will then be identifying such areas and say, it seems there's no work happening this way. And what should be the interventions of government? The government then also has then to come in there and mobilize resources towards the deployment, particularly in the rural communities and in areas where the markets will always not go and say because it's not profitable. And therefore, the infrastructure people at all aspects then needs to be internally there so that they could and do those particular assessments, evaluations, guide, and indeed where the need arises then to then develop programs that will then respond to those particular need identified areas. So that we could then also ensure, therefore, that every South African does benefit from the type of service that we want to run, in addition to collaborations, as we said, but also that collaboration needs coordination in itself. And then the department, therefore, position itself really to work with industry, all levels of the spheres of government, because if you could then also look at provinces are deploying resources also, they are all investing in the deployment of broadband, you know, at the municipality level they do, and everybody does as they saw the need. But that coordination and leadership aspect ought then to also be available from the level of the DOC, and therefore the infrastructure people then specializing in those particular areas, whether it's radio frequency and the digital dividend that is going to be there, how are we going to deal with it? We have to then have people who from time to time prepare the country for beyond 2013 when we switch off from analog into digital. That spectrum that is going to be available, the digital dividend, how are we going to respond to it? From time to time, you need people who specialize in the space communication aspects of it, because there's now debates in the world around the issues of the KA and the QU bands and the C bands, and then the mobiles wanting the space in the C band, and obviously the space people saying that we don't want any mobile people. So there's a tough battle going on. Next year, World Radio Communication Conference is going to be conflicted around that particular issue. So you need this capacity in the department to prepare even our participation in the international forums that deals with those particular specialized and technical issues from time to time, while sourcing it probably to those who might have researched it in the universities and others in the private sector, understanding the thinking and so forth, and also mobilizing a common country position so that even when we go to those conferences as private sector, as NGOs or civil society, as a government, we speak with one voice where possible, because we would have prepared ourselves not towards the inputs that are going to be there. So that is the type of capacity from time to time that you need to see residing in the department. We are not physically doing it, but we are there really to give guidance, leadership, and develop positions, policies, and so forth. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DM. Follow up, Honorable van der Rohe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to find out, we spoke about the universities and what they can do, what they can add. If the DOC can just give an indication, are there a willingness, a readiness from, for instance, the universities and the private sector to add so that South Africa can be successful in this communication setup we're in? And if we look at the time frames, are you satisfied that we're on a winning track at this stage? Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, Chair, I want to ask from the Honorable Doctor there that though life is full of contradictions, we've come to realize contradictions are there for us to live with.
But there's this particular one that I can't understand in this country. It keeps on confusing me. That on one hand, we need skills. There's a shortage of skills that I can understand. But on the other hand, you go to black engineering council that tell you, we've got skills. These are graduates from technicals and universities. But industry can use them. So you then get surprised when there are so many engineers that are not employed in this country. What is the problem there? Is our institution not up to scratch, which is something we should correct, or what is the problem? The second one is this one that though private sector is there, and part of it, I mean, I would imagine Vodacom comes from overseas. They are at the same time here to invest, which is good, but they are at the same time our competitors. I mean, South Africa has to compete with any other person in the free market, any other nation. So they'll be here with knowledge, and I hear that they do have knowledge, the knowledge is there. But I'm sure we need to develop our own knowledge, because they are not going to give us their knowledge so that we can beat them in the competition. If HATA is to be developed, it must do its own research. So to depend from knowledge from overseas, I'm also not happy. The last point on the contradiction is this one that I've spoken about when we were in the telecom communication about the spectrum engineer, that there's only one and they are trained overseas. That's also a contradiction. If they are trained overseas and they must come and use the knowledge here to beat people from Britain, Britain is not, I don't think, promote that. I mean, national interest comes first. So I basically want to argue that anything that is South African for me is best, because nobody is going to sacrifice this nation for us. I'd like to hear the doctor's comment.
Noted, doctor. The next one will be Mtambi.
Thank you, sir. Mine is on slides on page 26 and 28. The issue of the lease agreement, which ISA utilizes for DNEL. I understand you are saying the equipment has been appropriated by DOC in terms of the lease agreement. Whereas on page 22, it says in 2008 there has been a verbal agreement between the DG of DOC and the Department of Science and Technology to transfer the lease contract from DOC to DSP so that it will form part of SANSA. I believe this will have saved you a lot of costs, because I understand this improvement that you are making where you are upgrading. It's your own cost, and DNEL, I think it's included in the lease agreement that any improvements that are done, at the end of the day, they will still go to DNEL. I want to understand what is the snagness of not of the department not finalizing the transfer of the lease agreement. Because since 2008, today, as it is the 24th of May, 2011, what is the turnaround time? And then, secondly, it's on page 27 of the slides. Also, it's about the staff complement. And given the huge task this institution is faced with, you said additional staff will be appointed within the current financial year. And then we want to, there are no time frames attached to that. We want to understand how soon and when will it be. Thank you.
Honorable Makazi.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I just want to ask a question on page 5. I think it's about the proposed DOC organogram. And maybe the question that I will ask, Chair, I will ask direct to the DG, and also the acting DG, and also to the deputy minister. I'm looking at this organogram, of the DOC. And I'm asking myself, DG, acting DG, you have come up with this proposed organogram, and you know that the department, you are still looking for the director general, the permanent one, not the acting one. What informed you to come up with this structure? Because in a corporate world, I think you would wait for the director general to come in and assess the environment, scan the environment, and do the structure and change the structure according to the needs of that department. So, and I'm saying this because with conscience that you are active. But I think, and also when are we getting the director general, director general? And that question, it goes to a deputy minister. If you can.
I can get an answer. Thank you.
Tatuva and your team.
The willingness of universities, I think there's overwhelming willingness on the part of universities to engage government and to contribute to government programs. I think, and I've spoken to students at one university indicating that they're doing so much academic work, they need ideas and plans to start also contributing to implementation of a government program. So I think there's a more in this time frame an understanding of the practical need for intellectual engagement. So I think from university side there is a willingness, and I think we can work on that premise. Skills industries. You know, there's a major problem that we face in South Africa. I mean, we're in the middle of a revolution, an ICT revolution. And what MDs of companies tell me is that, you know, they get students without the appropriate skills, and they have to retrain and upskill. Now, this is a massive problem, I think, world over, where universities, where the corporate sector will have to change in order to provide the appropriate skills to people for the new types of work that is emerging. And that is also what we have to understand in our country, that a lot of debate is how to create jobs within the context of the current industrial environment or in the current environment. We need to think about work that will be there in 10 years' time, and how do we prepare our young people for the new kind of jobs, you know, and that is the issue that we're sitting with. That is what universities also admit, that you know, to change teaching and research at university level is very difficult. It's a big ship to turn around. So that is one of the key reasons that many of our young people, especially in the ICT environment, you know, for nowadays, for example, a degree in computer science doesn't mean much, because that is not what the industry needs. All right, so we have to ensure that we build the computer science degree around modules that will provide people with will make students employment ready, and that is the main reason for the existence and establishing of the eSkills Institute, that we provide students with the knowledge that will make them employable. There are other reasons. I think, you know, in the industry, some corporates feel, or some employers feel, that students coming from universities are just not capable of delivering on what the corporate world needs. And that is something that we have to address. And there is, you know, perceptions around some universities better than others, or some universities weaker than others. So there are a variety of reasons why we find that young people with qualifications not being able to find jobs, and we have to rectify that. And that is why we also need to have a massive drive towards reskilling and upskilling unemployed students, because they have, you know, they've been 3 years at the university environment, so it's easy to upskill and reskill. So that is a massive drive that we have to undertake in the country. Competitors, I think, especially in the telecoms sector, we find more and more that competitors are actually collaborating, because nowadays it's not about the knowledge that you have. It is about applying that knowledge. It's about innovation. So for corporates to share knowledge is not a big issue. It is when the corporate goes back and apply the new knowledge, that is where the issue is, and the competitive advantage is. Those who are innovative will make it in the new economy, in the new world. So yes, we find that competitors, the Vodacoms, the Celsius, the big companies, they come together and share knowledge. Knowledge is free, and you can go to Google and find knowledge. Around the spectrum engineers, yes, again, I think it's a new thing worldwide, and I think we need to build the internal capacity to train people appropriately within them. I mean, as far as I know, we have spectrum specialists, but we don't have spectrum managers, spectrum that can manage spectrum in our country. That is, again, an international problem. We just don't have those skills also internationally, and people are moving around globally in terms of jobs. Then the ISA issue, Daniel, of course, I mean, the DOC in terms of ISA has a responsibility to deal with the space part of ISA, and there's a lot of testing going on at this point in time, and those the apparatus and the machines will have to be upgraded and maintained by the Department of Communications as long as that is needed. Of course, there is discussions, and there have been discussions in 2008 in terms of how we deal with the space technology part of the DOC. At that time, there was a verbal agreement, but then a new DG was appointed, and the DG had a different view. And I think we wait for the next DG to really take that process forward, but I think...
I hope that your DG is not going to have a different view than
that is the problem that we're facing, and I think that... but there is... we're in the process to put things together in terms of getting the Department of Science and Technology and the DOC to start talking about these things so that we can get to finality around this. And the staff complement at ISA, I think, as I've said, there are two areas. The one is also the applications development part, and those that staff will be accommodated as part of the eSkills Institute in developing this applications laboratory. So that is the first step in terms of building this applications laboratory in the country. Then the proposed organogram and the time frames for this, I think then the staff at ISA, they are there, and we're in the process to just, you know, to transfer them to a new environment. Then the proposed organogram, what informs that? I mean, what informs the organogram was, of course, the realization that we need to change the institutional arrangement of a DOC to be in line with new demands, with new new demands from industry, from society. There were gaps in the organogram. There were overlap and duplications. So there was a consultant appointed that took the department through a scientific process in terms of what is needed. We've aligned the department to the strategic plan, the organogram to the strategic plan of the department. So what informed the process was the problems that existed with the current organogram, and also the issue of alignment with the new direction of the department. And that was an intensive process, and I think we've done that, and we're finalizing that, and I think the new DG will have to implement, otherwise we will take another long time to go through the same process. So I think we are at the point where we need to deliver now on our new strategic plan with new capacity.
So, precisely, that is why I am asking. I am aware about that the department is under capacitation. And as you are sitting there as an acting CPD, you are aware that in the department, there is a process of getting the director general. And in fact, your department, you came here in the same room with the minister and pronounced that in the middle of May, the department will be having a DG. And my question is this thing, why are you continuing with this structure and yet you know there is a DG that is coming? And that DG, that will be the person who will be accountable for the department. And that is the person who will scare the environment within the department. The person that will tell you that, here we need a spectrum engineer, or here we need a management engineer. You see my dilemma with the structure. You would want us to approve this organogram, and somebody else comes in with a different mind, unless you know the department, whom do you want? Somebody comes in and look at this organogram and say, no, this is not what I want. This is how I want things to be done according to what the needs of the industry. That is why I'm asking you. Why are you rushing this? Why don't you hold and wait for that person to come in and then you hand over? That these are this is the process that we've went so far. Then you can take it and give that person to apply his or her mind. What does he want to see the department to look like? Thanks.
Chairperson, can I?
That's too very so. Can or DM?
DM, yeah.
Okay. It must be short.
Yeah, we'll try. The process of the organogram has been an ongoing thing, from consultants to the time when myself and the minister were appointed. We did engage with that process. Money has been spent, obviously, towards fast-tracking and moving on the issue. And it has been presented to the committee, but it's not yet concluded. The processes of consultations are still going on. They've just come from another consultation with the DPSA. And then also they will still be going into other processes with Treasury. And obviously we will also be further consulting with the Portfolio Committee, because whatever is the final structure, it will need additional money. And then therefore the committee must be taken on board so that it could then also assist in the approval of that money as and when we deliver the structure. But the structure is not, we are not requesting approval today because those consultations are still going on. The budget is assigned to the portfolio committee. It's a budget that is going to be linked to the current structure of the department. The new structure proposal in the processes of consultation will be able then to come, probably through the adjustments in October or the new financial year, whatever is the committee's seeing it as a point of agreeing with us and then indeed agreeing to the new additional new money, then we'll do so. So there will be consultations indeed, and then up to the finality, because indeed we know the power of the portfolio committee in terms of the approval of the money. But those consultations should continue so that there is work going on. So when the new DG comes in, obviously we'll fund the process in and so that takes it on board and runs it and then towards conclusion. I will then also indicate that without taking the thunder from the minister, who will be pronouncing and announcing when the new DG will be assuming duty and who will be the person, interviews took place.
No, don't worry, it's off record.
Yeah, no. There's nothing off record. Interviews took place on Friday last week. That then is an indication of movement. And then the other processes also ought to be followed, the recommendations to the cabinet, and after the cabinet has looked at the issue, and then the minister will make an announcement of the successful candidate, and then obviously it will also be indicated when is the person assuming responsibility. So we'll then have to wait for that, but at least interviews took place on Friday. Thank you.
That's the voice of Kubaba. But that's too bad.
Yeah, I think that was the last issue, Honorable Chairperson.
No, thanks, Acting DG. One issue asked by Mthambi around the issue of staff. She asked when that additional staff is going to be in place, because we have indicated so, but there is no specific in terms of time frame. We have responded generally about the staff, the integration of the staff and so on, but we didn't answer the question. She was asking exactly when, because there's no time frame which is linked around the issue she was asking the question around. Now, maybe you can be able just to clarify that one quickly.
I think, I mean, that is one thing that we perhaps will have to leave to the incoming DG to really finalize that in terms of advertising and so on. But where there are opportunities to move people around within a department where there are vacancies, we will do that, and we in fact busy with that process.
Makazi.
Thanks, Chair. Another issue, Chair, that I want to ask, looking at this presentation and its page on the branches, the E-Skill Institute. Page 13. Maybe I need clarity on this one, okay? Because I know you have this. It's the E-Skill Institute. You have Imeraka, and then you have I forgot the other one. But what I want to ask the acting DG is, what is the relationship of this institute with the Department of Higher Education? Because I know for the fact that all the CTAs, they've been moved from the Department of Labor to sit at the Department of Education. And one of the mandates or the responsibility of the
the Minister of Higher Education, is to make sure that we integrate the FET colleges, the universities, our institutions, and what will be the relationship of this institution with the institutions that are residing at the higher education. Don't you think that it will be good for this institution to move out of the DOC to go and actually sit at the higher education? Because there is a duplication, if I look at it, there is a duplication of some sort. I'm just saying, is it possible to move this thing out of the DOC and go and take it to the higher education? And what is the relationship between those two departments? Because in terms of developing the curriculum, you are also required to assist the higher education. Because higher education, they are coming up now with the quality and strategy NSD3, which encompasses, cuts across all the needs of training. Thank you.
That was the last, Dr.
Yeah. The ISCUS Institute is a dedicated institution for the ICT environment. And we are in discussions with the minister. Our minister met with the Minister of Britain some Monday already. I've met with the DG of Higher Education and Training. And we collaborate already on a number of programs and projects. In fact, and I've indicated it in the narrative of my presentation, that we're working collaboratively on FET colleges, programs that we're developing in collaboration with the higher education and training institution. The issue is that world over, there's a trend for dedicated institutions in the ICT space. You get universities of ICTs, you get institutions, institutes, and so on. And that is what we're establishing here. And I think there's also a realization in the higher education training department that we need the skilling of people in all sorts of environments, and not only at the university or FET college level. But that is why I said that the ISCUS Institute is not there to duplicate, or we collaborate with institutions, but with a very focused agenda on improving the quality of life of people through e-skilling. That is very important for the society to be able to use ICTs effectively, but also, very importantly, to deliver within the ICT space employment-ready students. So we have a very focused attention, we also talk to the new CETA, the MICT CETA, and the idea is to bring all these institutions to get synergy and collaboration. Of course, going into the future, we will have to debate the issue whether the ISCUS Institute will move out of a DOC. I personally believe that the DOC is the department dealing with ICTs in the country, the department engaging with the ICT industry, and if we need to provide the jobs and the employable students, we need to really collaborate and understand the needs of the industry. And if you put it into the education department, you don't have that direct engagement via a department with the industry and the employers. So there will be a lot of debate where actually this will be located, but I think the fundamental importance is how do you do this to actually contribute to the massification of skills? I think that is the point, should be the point of departure then rather where organizationally this will be placed. But it will, of course, be determined by our engagement with higher education training in the future.
Maybe let me say last week when we engaged on the discussion, we took note that we didn't have enough time to discuss your ISPA, your ISKID Institute into detail as a committee so that we understand exactly what it entails and how it's going to help ICT in developing moving forward. Part of the things we said we'll go back to those issues where we'll have enough time just focusing on it so that we get more information so that we don't discuss it piecemeal. Because we need to engage more in details and understand who are the players there. Department of Higher Education, who else is a player doing what, and how far it will go, and how it's going to take the industry forward or the sector and so on. So I'm sure we'll come back to those things as time goes on so that we deal with that into detail. Ndabeni.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks, Chair. Let me greet everybody in the meeting room, especially after this overwhelming majority that the ANC got in the election. Chairperson, I want to thank the Department of Communication for taking time to continuously engage and accommodate our concerns in their strat plan. I know it has not been difficult. At some point you even felt you are being too technical. Your understanding is that you are supposed to only be dealing with the broader issues, not the technical aspect of your work. But as we all understand, when things don't happen, it is us who take the fall, not yourself. If our government, through the president, has promised to build houses to people, and then your service providers, appointed by yourselves as our civil servants, decide to put in poor quality, we take the blame. Therefore, you must understand and allow us when you want to go into detail of your work. Because we need to make it a point that whatever mandate you have achieves the desired results by our president and our communities. But I want to make few suggestions or advices to the department. I now finally agree that your strat plan gives us something that we can commit to the public out there, that indeed we having their interest in our hearts, and we believe that as the department you are capable of doing exactly what we want. But for you to be able to implement or deliver on what we are going to adopt as a strategic planning document, you have to make it a point that you resource your internal structures. I won't go through your AGE report and whatever weaknesses that you have discovered, but it is important that you take note of that. Whilst you have this good plan that we now agree on as the portfolio committee, without those internal structures, we won't see any progress. Secondly, a critical need to fill the vacant posts. Because this plan is not going to deliver itself. It would need people on the ground. And then if you still have some vacancies that would impact on the delivery of this, you would be failing us and the country as well. Thirdly, on the issue of the proposed structure, I would recommend that you take your time and then immediately come to Parliament so that you engage with yourselves through the structure, so that we are able to agree, looking into your mandate and then the structure that you are proposing, if indeed it's going to help us achieve what we want to achieve. One of the things that we have noticed are the weaknesses in the department is the poor coordination within the department together with its parastatals. I strongly believe that if you strengthen your coordination unit so that you are able to provide a clear and effective leadership to your parastatals. Nothing is going to stop us to achieve what we want to achieve as communication. Lastly, I've listened to you, Dr. the acting DJ. You spoke on the need of liaison with other institutions, especially universities, on the issue of R&D. It is important that we engage robustly on that point, because we don't want to continuously develop policies that are not informed. We must have critical reasons why we want to review this policy, why we must amend, or why must we phase it out. And without a strong R&D, trust me, ICT industry cannot go anywhere, because it goes hand in hand with policy making that helps in achieving the accessibility and everything about the sector. Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to highlight those few things. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Davin. I don't see any other hand. You see, you have been continuously saying the coming DG. I assume that you have not applied for the DG post, so there's no prospect that you might be the DG moving forward and so on. But I just wanted to say, if we happen to have a next committee meeting without you, with the new DG, you must just understand that we have appreciated the time we had with you as an acting DG as a committee in trying to steer the ship of DOC wherever we are now. We hope that whoever will come in will take from wherever we are going to live and take the ship forward to its destination and so on. It has been a wonderful engagement, and I hope you will come, will be as open as you are, because we have been failing to be a closed book. We have been an open book and open and upfront in terms of the issues and talk things as they are, not trying to spin doctoring things and so on, which we have appreciated and enjoyed to work with you and so on. I know that you've got a passion about your e-skill institute and so on. Hopefully next time when we meet, if the appointment happens very soon, you'll be able to engage us about the e-skill institute and your ESA and the other related issues. But we have appreciated very much the time we spent with you. All the best. Maybe we'll meet again. Still acting is fine. By the time you relinquish the acting, but it will be a nice experience which we had as a company. Thanks very much, Dr. Before you go, I just want to remind myself. Dr. Roko, before you were acting, by the way, Roko was the PCC
for what? For policy, but seconded to operationalize the East Coast Institute. Yes. Chairperson, just one second. Also from my side, it was really a pleasure to work with the honorable members and yourself. And it was a great learning experience for me. And I really enjoyed it. And also my colleagues who also always assisted. I think we worked as a collective and as a team. Thank you very much for indulging me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DOC. You are dismissed. Ikapa? Just from the floor.
We were not aware that this is actually, they had a committee meeting in Durban on Friday to discuss it. The recess, they also had the strategic plan to adjust that meeting. So they did the strategic plans and budget for the ICASA. The issues they're talking about were not about planning, but PNG didn't monitor the meetings in Joburg. I don't think we've got resources there, and I don't think we were even aware of it. So it was quite tricky to actually pick up and follow what they're talking about.
It was.
Yeah.
The other thing is,
recorder.
Is it okay from the back of the speaker?
Put it near your speaker here, and then it's fine. Actually, this room is nice. Some rooms in the new assembly, you know, the big main building, they'd move it. There's no sound system whatsoever.
How do you suggest?
Really, yeah. I always sort of put my recorder sort of like there, and it picks up perfectly fine. And what I also do, you notice, sort of after each person speaks, I sort of take a note of the time on it.
So when
you transcribe, it's actually quite nice for you to still work on your laptop, because I do that when we do public hearings, and they all have a lot of work and these plugs. It's not all the rooms actually have plugs. Saves a lot of time. But sometimes you can't always catch everything. You need to go and re-listen. Like I just asked Lisa, that's ISAMIN, you know, the Institute of Space and Software Application. You know, they never bother to explain. Then you don't want to still re-listen for 3 hours, you know, of a meeting. It makes it so much easier when you're writing up your proper notes, you know, to just go back. So one of the tricks I've learned in time. But today I only have to do the first hour. I don't have to stay, but the challenge for me is I don't mind the writing. I can do the writing in the lecture. I noticed you went to engage with them, and that's what makes me nervous.
I must admit it, I just have to take a time.
This is an OPMG, so you do need to at least get the speaker. And I need to have every person attending, but to see the speaker, identify them who they are. And you can, it's always easier to do it up front. So you can pop it, you know. After a while you get to know your committee, they always sit at one side and the guys on the other end. You can go to them and sort of say, do you mind giving me the details? Because I need to identify you accurately. My other trick, you know, especially with black surnames, is really difficult. Is I just say to them, how do you spell that? And I'm dreading the day somebody says S-M-I-T-H, you know. You also need to get back the first name. Now, both these guys, I've had come across before. I think his name is Harold Besser. But I'll just stick in my earlier notes, but you can Google for me as well. I'm going to say to these guys at this level.
That's my only thing. The writing, I think I'm okay with that.
But
just the procedure.
They just like, you know, you just sort of said, if I'm from TMG, I just need to identify the speaker's accuracy. I mean, nobody wants their name and stuff, you know, what they're supposed to do on the internet. You know, so they're usually quite, especially departmental people, they're so trained to put in human data.
The other thing is, those reports, those presentations that they kept referring to.
That's the most important. I think the SABC one, certainly. I've asked the secretary to organize a copy for me as well, because I'm not sure if it's the presentation they did before the recess, or is it just a new one? And I was just going to ask him, seeing that he's seen it, and he's going to do it.
And he seems to be.
Mm-hmm.
Members, can we start?
Fella?
The SAB.
We must start. Members, we are going to check SABC.
And as a result, any CEO that comes in, I guess that most probably explains why there was conflict. Any CEO that comes in does not implement their own personal strategy. So what we have here in front of us are matters of the board, and the board then give authority to a CEO to implement. Therefore, the board is accountable, in fact, in terms of our articles of association as well, the board, in actual fact, is the accountable officer, not the CEO. Therefore, if the CEO deviates from that, is a problem. There's a conflict between the CEO and the board. Therefore, these matters that we present here are matters that have been through board and are adopted by board. In other words, if a CEO comes and he or she wants to come now and change the whatever they want to change, it is in the context that they may change and propose to board to get approval if they want. Perhaps they come with ideas and so on to improve the organization. Nothing stops them from, but at the end of the day, they have to escalate whatever proposal they have to board and get approved. Once that is approved, then that gets implemented. So any CEO that comes in and obviously want to do a personal trip, then unless that is approved by board, then, you know, that is the matter. As far as we are concerned, the strategy of the board, approved by board, any deviation, they get reprimanded by the board. Period. The second question was to, in terms of the operating model, there was a question about whether marketing intelligence and editorial policy should swap around. The fact of the matter is that in terms of the operating model, those boxes do not represent levels. So you don't have to, we can change it, but in the operating model, they don't represent levels. So the fact that it's on top does not mean it is better than the ones on the bottom. So it is just to isolate divisions, the areas of operation. But we don't have a problem with it. Yeah. You then asked a question about job creation, and then I'd like to answer that with the following question that said, how do we measure when we are successful? In fact, I want to draw your attention to a slide that I put up on the screen there to illustrate how we make an impact and how you can measure on things. I mean, what we do as a broadcaster, sometimes we don't even have to sit down and see whether it's delivered or not, such as the for instance, the election. But for us, look at programming. For instance, if you look at the developmental imperatives on the site, right, we take the developmental imperatives of government. We took that as a policy. Then we said, in our content, how do we realize those developmental imperatives? So the developmental imperatives are not ours. We take them from government policy. Then we say, in our programming, how do we satisfy these developmental imperatives? If you look at this one, for instance, your one specifically, which is the job creation one, in our programming, if you go to five of our programs, you go to HIP to be squared, it encourages job creation, it capacitates skills, it's young people who look at, and we have examples of many of them who went on the program and went on to start new businesses and so on.
We have another program called ISPANI, which looks at job creation in the rural areas and so on, and it's run by youth. You have an impact there. We also have, it's not necessarily for job creating, it makes metrics uploaded, which assist our grade 12. But we have another job creating program, which is called Exe Lalela, which also specifically addresses issues of job creation. So you can be able to go there as a monitor, as a, our oversight, to see our content, our program, and say, right, in our program, how do you provide for these things? So what we're illustrating here are our way you can measure us as well, outside even the what we had in the template. So you can be able to see immediately whether our programs do align to what you propose. But remember, I think I'll go to your answer as well, to your question on what we intend, especially when you say you are retrenching. And remember what we are doing at the moment. We're forming a lot of partnerships with, we're about to sign an MOU with NEMISA. We're looking at downstream. We look at creation, in other words, incubating support industries like films and so on, and assisting them, rather. So we don't necessarily say we're looking at doing away with everyone. We are assisting as well in assisting other support services and industries to us to create, you know. So we are assisting there as well. But the manner in which we are looking at how we manage our numbers, we're not necessarily going, remember we've committed that we're not going to do forced retrenchment. So we're evaluating issues of early retirement and voluntary, but we are also retraining all of our employees. For, if you remember, we are starting new divisions like the digital unit and so on, and we're not necessarily employing from outside. We're upskilling our current employees. So we take that quite seriously. There was a question as well as to what represents the 16% on the LSM. If you look at the REMS provisions, you would know that in terms of that one, the those numbers actually are from REMS. And as we speak, no one is, in terms of, if you go look at the competitors of SABC3, the biggest market share is on 20%. All right, so we are on 13% on it, to say we are on 13 and we want to incrementally over 3 years reach 21 and thereon grow from there. So it is for that reason. These are market intelligence figures. So it is out of that we target to say, look, if our biggest competitor is on biggest market share on 20, we want to surpass that, but we are on 13, therefore we need to incrementally on an annual basis grow. So that is why it is in terms of that, especially that is a very tough LSM, that 7 to 10. It's a very tough market. I think in terms of the funding of the disabilities, I think we take that very, very seriously, to an extent that we, in many instances, we self-fund that. What we were trying to indicate, when we are indicating some financial issues, is not to say we're not going to do our responsibilities. We were beginning to see beyond the current, in other words, beyond just sign languages and so on, because we're looking into other provisions, like looking into provisions for the blind and so on, and those require infrastructure somewhat, which is why we said, if you look at why the issue of DTT came in, it was merely because the new STPs would anyway include these things automatically. But we say, between now and then, we need to make provisions for all of the disabilities, for instance. And we have met with DEF-SA at the SABC, and we're looking at many of their input in terms of some of these things. But we have not stopped. You would have seen an improvement since last month as well, in terms of all of our news, especially, and most of our programs. There are also discussions continuing in terms of exploring other funding avenues. We in discussions with the DOC and the Minister of Women and Persons with Disabilities to explore, but we're not stopping on that one. There was a question as well about clarity on the executive fixed-term contracts. You were saying that 2005. Basically, what we are saying is that, to explain that one, I was simply saying that people in the SABC before 2005, everyone was employed on a permanent basis. So from 2005, they started, especially at the top level, giving fixed-term contracts. So it does not mean that all of those people, 11 years later, they are still there. It does happen. It had happened before that you find that people had their contracts rolling over and not being terminated. So that is a fact. But since last year, we began to clamp down on that, in particular because we were beginning to manage our costs. So basically, to clarify that, they are on fixed terms and they expire at different times, these contracts, depending on when the person starts. For instance, these four executives that we are offering this week, it will be five-year contracts. They will end at the end of the 5 year. But as we employ others during the year, it is end anniversary 5 years later. We were asked a question as to what is the progress on the structural approval. The issue with that one was that the full board meeting was scheduled for the 20th of April to approve the structure. That is when we were required to be in Parliament. That therefore the board meeting of the 20th was then moved to the 6th of June. So they are considering that on the 6th of June. Hopefully it's signed. Hopefully they approve on the 6th, which is, I think, two Mondays to go. And then we can begin to report that perhaps it was achieved within this first quarter. Like I indicated when I started, these delays at some point, they cost us because our timelines are quite tight in particular. But our board is aware. The difficulty is that as we speak, it's difficult to form a quorum even within this current board. But they are moving with it. I would like to answer on the issue of policy reviews. The ones that you see there, in fact, a bit of both. All of our policies, especially human resources policies, had not been reviewed in 4 years or so, which is why we took a decision to review all of them in bulk. The ones that you see were the ones that impacted on employee benefits. So the reason for that is that those that impact on employee benefits, you have to negotiate with labor during the course of the year before you implement that. That is why, it's in terms of the leave, the 13th check, and so on. So those are the ones that typically you would have to reach an agreement with the unions before you actually even. But from the company side, they are part of the bulk that have been reviewed, that will go to board, but then you will then enter into negotiation process with the unions on that, and hopefully they agree to most of them. You asked me a question about the skills audit. I think this one is a generic concern to say you have dashes, therefore what happens in between? But the one that applies to skills audit in particular, which I think the intention was that we intend to, by quarter four, have finalized the full skills audit process. But then in between on quarters, there are activities which we've highlighted there on the step one, which, for instance, reviewal of job grading, reviewal of competency framework, and so on. So perhaps what we could do there is to spread them across the year. But the intention was to indicate that these are the activities that we have. So it does not mean that in the quarters we do nothing. prepared for your ease of use to highlight for oversight purposes, will amend to say in quarter one, perhaps the whole job grading is reviewed, in quarter two, the whole competency profiles are sorted and so on, maybe to make it easy. So, and then we just look across the rest of the document. There was a question on the one for financial health, which talks about the TV license connection. We have amended that. We realize that it is causing concern. What we've done is the intention was that when we said 100% achieved per quarter, what we've done now is to clean it up and indicate that each quarter you achieve 25%. In other words, so what we had meant by 100% of the so what the amendment that we've introduced here, I think it's in this one, is to say it's 25% per quarter, each of the quarter. Then at the end of the fourth quarter, then you should have the whole sum. So I hope that clarifies that one. I'm very sorry about the issue of the copy of the editorial policy, but we will make sure that that is available. And I also do confirm that we are engaging ICASA and the other entities in terms of their input into that, definitely. In fact, they're forming a critical part of that. the issue of universal access, in terms of these, we do self-fund on it, but where it is not budgeted for, we make a provision to try and see where we can get extra access for. As we indicated in the document, our intention is to ensure that by each of the years we achieve 100 low power transmitters. Therefore, that provision we've made within our current budget. But if, for instance, we said even if we do that, we still have 1.5 million people outside, we would have to accelerate much more, then we'll have to seek extra funding for that. The issue of state bailout, there is no question about another state bailout. The only possibility of a state bailout is if we don't do turnaround. I'll show you a slide here that shows you the cost of not doing turnaround. We would need, if we don't do turnaround in the SABC, we would need 1.8 billion in real time if we do nothing. Meaning it is very important, this is the slide. If you look at our projected 36 months cash flow, that blue line there represents the 1.8 billion cost turnaround. In other words, we have to ensure that we implement all of our projects that we had identified, because if we do that, then we are able to go over the line and begin to achieve our projected positive cash. So we have to accelerate all attempts that we have in the turnaround. That is the only possibility of any particular state bailout. Other than that, there is no question of another state bailout. I mean, as we speak, you would have seen our some of our finances that we're sitting on good cash. We are servicing our debt. We're going to be paying net bank ahead of time. We only scheduled to pay in December, but we're paying up front the 111 million. So the question of state bailouts is no longer a question. I think I've answered the issue about policy reviews to say the policy review is the job of the board to approve the policy. The executives merely develop and recommend, and the board can kick them out or add. So the executives recommend to the board, giving their expertise. But the board has final arbitrary powers to reject a policy. So that is the process in terms of governance. I think I've addressed all questions, sorry.
you see, if there are many follow-ups, it would be unfortunate. We're only having 10 minutes left. We must finish, but we'll take the follow-up. I'm not sure I want to make follow-up before I go to DM. Oh, okay. DM, can you respond to those questions and I'll take follow-up?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I think the question was around who is the driver of the policy, who initiates policy, who develops policy. And then I think we need to separate what is policy. There's operational policy that the SABC will indeed develop as said, we are executive to the board approves or not approving. It's more operational. You are HR, you are marketing, you are content, all those things obviously are operational elements. However, the broadcasting policy obviously is the minister. And whatever they do in the policy is the operationalization of that broadcasting itself. So there's no way where I think it has been indicated that SABC is performing out of the legislation that established itself. So that remains the custodian of the ministry of DOC. So therefore, it continues in that way. However, just to indicate also that there will be a white paper review on broadcasting in general. It's 12 years old. So much has changed in the country, so much has changed in the industry, so much has changed in that environment of broadcasting. So South Africa is lagging behind when you compare yourself with other nations. So obviously the reviewers will have public processes, public hearings, the involvement of Parliament itself in terms of what is it that we think ought to make us now shape and learn on the white paper itself. There will also be the review of the Broadcasting Act that establishes the SABC, so that we could then based on the broadcasting review in general, begin to align whatever needs then to be aligned within that. But obviously, with the mandate remaining the same, that SABC will continue to provide the public service mandate in terms of broadcasting. So I think that issue then should not therefore be confused with the internal policy, and then hence it was responded in that particular way. The last then, Chair, just to comment on others, I think the job creation issue has been well explained. There will be capacity for SABC to still employ people, but obviously at the high level, and I think as indicated, there was so much duplication, but that does not mean completely just reducing and not caring in terms of job creation. The digital media is coming in very strongly. The migration itself will create both opportunities and job creation. In other areas, it will be an opportunity. It will not be a job directly linked to SABC in terms of physical employment of a person, but it will be either in the content aspect of it where the independent producers then grow, because the multi-channel SABC will then be looking for content all over. So there will be so much opportunities then that will then come their way as a result of that migration from analog to digital. And then another take a point in as far as funding of the access for the people with disabilities, and I think it's a very serious point, and I think as we said that the language there is not helping. So we will indeed take it in the shareholder meeting together with the SABC and then also working with the other ministries that are relating to the subject matter so that we could then agree to fund this money and really make sure that that program not wait for the digitalization aspect of it, but also to start making an initiative, and we'll come back to Parliament and say this is how we're resolving it going forward. And an unfortunate language was used in that particular area is if we have reached a dead end. I don't think there's a dead end to it, and that was not the intention. And then the issue of the universal access in general will then be dealt with when we deal also with the broadcasting, but also the practical elements that did not happen, that could have happened. There are so many doables that did not happen within this environment. Access, universal access, even the fund that is there, how then do we begin to develop programs that can then appeal for that fund really to be channeled towards the fulfillment of all the objectives that are there. So there were those doables that were not in place that the minister and myself will have to drive. And lastly, Chair, is then also to say to join you in the inquiry how the SABC performed during the broadcasting of the election. We went on site. There were over 1,000 people, personnel on the field and also at the center, results center. And there we saw SABC Auckland Park, all of it, at the ROC functioning and on. And it therefore is an indication in itself that SABC, when they are ready to do a 24-hour channel, they can do it. It's doable. It's something that is no longer a pipe dream, and it's doable. Just taking that 3 days of the elections, how it was broadcasting and reaching every corner of the land, and then with that capacity that it was able to deploy, from editorials to news gatherers to editors and so forth. So that is, so information is power at the end. Once people are more informed, the more opportunities that will grab in society. But the more you don't empower people with information, they don't access the information, obviously all the opportunities that the country and democracy present will be too much remote, you know, from them. And therefore, it is our duty, therefore, that we ensure that SABC indeed does that coverage, including people with disability, to access it. Thank you, Chair.
Daveni?
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to waste Parliament's money and not talk. I must talk. I'm getting paid for that. All right. I just want to understand, in terms of the current structure and your operating model, whom are we basing this strategic plan in terms of implementation? Who's going to implement, the current structure or the recommendations from the operating model? Secondly, just a few things. We all know that it is the responsibility of the board to come and account to Parliament. In the near future, it must not happen again that we don't have board members, directly elected board members, not accompanying you. Because it's their responsibility. When they commit and when you say we adopt a plan because we are going to make them accountable. You as their support staff must come and give a technical advice on that. Thirdly, a strategic planning document is a public document. So in the near future, we would appreciate that everything is clear so that whoever that was not part of this meeting is able to follow your document. Fourthly, the Department of Communications has wasted a lot of the Parliament's time. It doesn't make sense why as Parliament you must be busy engaging on pure administrative errors from the department or from the stakeholders, whereas the DOC is there. I believe that your strategic planning documents, before they are presented to Parliament, they are first submitted to the DOC, who must be able to scrutinize and assist you in correcting whatever that needs to be corrected. Next time, Deputy Minister and your people, we are not going to be bogged down into administrative issues. We are going to send you, together with your parastatals, away until you get your acts together. We were supposed to be debating today, but we had to postpone it because we are not done. It is not a good thing that we must delay our work as Parliament because of your failures. If the OC does not have capacity, they must tell us so that we see what to do. The same thing we expect from those that are hired by SABC Board. I believe that you are hired because of your technical expertise. If you are to sit here and engage you on the difference between activity and the KPI, then I don't understand what are you managing. If we must, as members of Parliament, we must engage on that. I just want to appeal to both of you, please help us do our work in a very productive way. Do your job. If these documents are designed by consultants, make it a point that you spend time with those consultants. And another advice on top of that, if they are designed by consultants, you make it a point that your workers are workshopped on this document. Because we don't want a document that is very nice in terms of wording, and when you go down to the implementers. They don't understand what is entailed in the document, which will then impact on the implementation. I hope when we come to your offices and meet with your workers, when I meet a cleaner and tell and ask him or her, what is the vision of your SABC, she must be able to tell me, and she must be able to tell me what is her contribution to make it a point that you achieve that vision. It must not be a management thing. Lastly, I want to understand, in terms of the structures that you have given us, both the recommendations from the operating model and the current structure, who are you? Where do you fit in the two? Just yourself. Thank you.
Kekan, we are after one, 2 minutes after one now. Kekan? Okay. Everyone is saying quick. Not sure we... Look, I mean, we just want to emphasize this point that when they speak about white paper and about the importance of communication to our people, those are the kind of things that we want. But you see, when a presentation is made, and at the end, things don't come out clear, we first have to ask questions. This is what is called a delay. Just the way they design their presentation or scorecard or template, because it doesn't capture the essence of what we as government want. We first have to ask questions before we get them. Just lastly, Chair, I mean, on the issue of job creation, it was there, but it looks like it is implicit. We don't want it to be implicit. It must be explicit because this is a big issue in the country. You know, when they present, if you feel, oh, this is communicated, the issue of job creation and combating poverty, and you feel that, yeah, no, communication institution like SABC is up in arms to fight this. You can see they are communicating, they are trying to find ways and means and inform our society. You'll be happy. For now, to be honest with you, I feel they are playing too many guns in movies there, sex, which the people like, of course. I also like to watch people driving. People driving Rolls Royce Porsche because it raises aspiration. I hope one day I'll also drive a Porsche. But the point is, these big issues about job creation, they are not as captured, as pushed. And this is what you want to feel after a presentation is made, that, yes, SABC is up in arms with its nation communication, communicating how to create jobs, how the society can get involved, and how to resolve the problem. But the play of guns, sex, and riches, you just feel those are big issues. And to be honest, if you do a survey, people will say, yes, we like to see people cheating. It's nice. But we just think, yes, things must change. And they don't come out strong when they make presentation. That's why we keep on wasting time and asking questions. Thanks, Jeff. I'm glad we have declared. Mutambi?
Thank you, Chair. It's a quick follow-up on the organizational structure. This board meeting that's taking place on the 6th of June, I'm made to presume that it's going to be approved, but I wanted to check an assurance from you whether all the operational requirements in terms of the Labor Relations Act has been complied with. I'm raising it also to link it with the executive structure review that you indicated. I asked a question to say 2005 up to 2011. You said some might have been expired, some of the contracts might have expired. I think the best thing which will require, Chair, you need to go and make an audit, a clear audit. I'm raising this issue because I'm afraid of this issue of legitimate expectation. If you have been renewing a man's contract and then you didn't comply with the operational requirements in terms of the Labor Relations Act. So the SABC will stand to be faced with a lot of legal battles. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The other one is on the staff policies. Like I said, all those policies that we have indicated in that page, they are all affecting staff, and it means the staff has to be consulted in all of them. So what you are saying, you say you can do it once, consult with them both, and have one staff code that includes all policies.
Makas.
No, Chair, I'm done. But I was going to make my follow-up, but I think my follow-up, I will make it at home, Deputy Minister.
It's a day of declaring. Other people are working at home. Quite a number of things. SIPC, a minute. SIPC.
Thank you, Chairperson. We must apologize for any misunderstanding, and we'll try and correct that. We really do apologize. I think the issue of the policies, we consult on all policies, in fact, in terms of the inputs. Those were just highlighted because there are terms and conditions, that's there. And we do also have what we call rules and regulations in the company, which is a uniform document that includes all of the, so that we consult on throughout as the company. You asked about the compliance to LRA. We have signed an agreement with the unions on a framework of engagement, in other words, engaging throughout the turnaround, which includes all of these things. However, in terms of that agreement, what we then isolated was that although we have signed an agreement, but in the event that we have to do any specific things that require, for instance, consultation in terms of the Labor Relations Act, then we serve new notices and so on as required by the Act. So that will happen. But the framework of agreement just gives you the broad framework of how we consult during this change process. We were asked as to who we are. myself, I have a fixed-term contract as head of strategy, but I've been asked to look, it's on the other side, the strategy plane. At the moment, I'm also assisting by acting as head of human capital, which is HR. And then Mr. turning on my left is stakeholder management and provinces, which is our regions previously. And in the stakeholder, is all our stakeholders are broken down, which includes Parliament. So Parliament would be part of his portfolio to look after as well. So those are our roles. And then now I'm acting head of human capital. It's there. Human capital, yes. Head of strategy, yes. It's in the previous structure. I was employed. It's not in the executive level in terms of, it's in the GM. It's in the CEO of office, yeah. Yeah. No, I'm acting as HR head at GE level, executive level. Yeah.
And then the other one is here.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Chair. Free or maybe just to say.
Oh, can you talk? I thought you can't. Because I've been doing a lot of work.
To honourable member there, I think you can trust the SABC. I think you have seen during the elections time, and also the IEC research, and the public trust us. I think you should trust us. We are second. We'll surprise you. Thank you very much. And I think the SABC has done well. The board of the SABC, you know, there is stability there. When there is stability, it means everything goes well. And when you look at our audience, it's example because they are growing. You know, we are up there now. When it comes to honorable member about us competing with other media house, as a public broadcaster, we should not compete with them because us is to educate and inform. And the argument that you are putting editorially so is, I mean, you know, good news, you can sell good stories. It is not true that you can't sell good stories. And we need to change the minds of our journalists to say you can sell good stories. And if we inform and educate, which means we need, if we are informing them about bad stories and so on, we are not honest, and we are not doing what we are supposed to do, because we don't balance the two. For me, I'm saying you can sell good stories, and we have done it. And we'll always sell good stories from SABC. And when it comes to editorial, we are also consulting the public. We are not just doing it from ourselves. And we are talking about how do we bring audience up and so on. We can't do it. We need to consult even our audience. Because from a radio background, we do our own research, not using outside research, internal research, our own platforms where we talk to listeners. What do you want? Programming, news, they will tell you what they want. That is the way that we are moving on, and I think we'll do well at ABC. But where it is due, really, we want to appeal to you to appreciate where we are doing well, even to say, no, here we are not doing well, we are also appreciating. But I think SABC is on the track. We are doing well. Thank you very much.
DM, a minute.
Thank you, Chair. I think I just wanted to say to the Portfolio Committee, we have heard your words of wisdom. I'll put them that way. Not the threat, the words of wisdom. We need to come better prepared between the DOC and the SABC. Obviously, the template that is being required by Parliament is no fail in the system, arising from the Money Amendment Act, and the Treasury has put it, you know, in the entire public service sector, that should be the type of a template that we need to follow. But also the presidency through the monitoring and evaluation, we keep on improving on it. Only this year did we then approve a new template for the entire reporting mechanism. And I hope, therefore, that we'll just have to workshop systems, workshop the entities, state-owned entities, the department itself, in terms of those particular requirements, so that we come even better in terms of the expectation and then expectation of the presidency in how we account in terms of delivery to the nation. And therefore, it's something that we just wanted to appreciate and take note of. And then indicate also that the document from the first to the second to the third, it has a number of improvements. And it did take on board quite a number of your own suggestions yourself. It might be lacking on one, two, or three issues, as pointed out, which we hope that will be improving. But however, when one looks at the first document, it was even more confusing than this latest submission. And thanks to you, and then also the way you want the things to happen, and the hard work of the officials and also the SABC people. Thanks very much.
David?
Chairperson, I just want to thank SABC and the board members in absentia for being patient and taking our advices on whatever issues that we have raised when we had concerns. It was not a matter of being rude or harsh or what, but as the African National Congress says, together we can do more. We just wanted to help you improve so that our people out there benefit in terms of quality in whatever services that you are giving out there. Again, I thank the minister, the David. But I can't thank that one, is not here. I'm thanking the deputy minister with his staff for the commitment that they have done, that they will make it a point that they make a follow-up and then provide a workshop on the template for all their stakeholders, so that we improve on our working. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, members. You have eaten your own time. We've got the EPC at 2. One is in E249 and the other one in Good Hope Chamber. I'm sure our cluster is in E249. So, members,
My conclusion around this matter is that we are accepting the presentation from SAPC, but we need more work needs to be done in relation to what Honorable Ndabeni and the DM has indicated in terms of making sure that we streamline our work and so on. But you must remember, members, that we said after this process, DOC and all the entities, they must go and meet and come up with one comprehensive document, which will be an overall strategic plan which they are going to implement with eliminating all the duplication, streamlining who's doing what without duplicating with any of the entities. If there is a duplication, it should be explained why and that duplication exists and so on. I hope that even SAPC, some of the issues which they are supposed to be tying up will come as part of that overall work which DOC must be able to do and so on. I hope next time we will put DOC to account on behalf of the SOEs if things don't go right. That's what has been coming from the members, because DOC must do its own oversight, not to oversight to be done by us only. Members, as I've indicated, that today you do have the GCIS report, but we are not going to deal with that. You can still go through it and check and so on. We hope by tomorrow before 10 you'll be having also the DOC one report, which you must also go through and look into that. We are requesting a special meeting between 9 and 10 Thursday, just 30 minutes meeting, so that we can just look into the report and adopt, because they must go to the ATC before we can debate. They must go through the ATC. If we do it Thursday, it means probably they can go Friday or Monday, but we can't debate without the report being went through the ATC, the normal internal process of Parliament. So I hope the meeting for Thursday will be, I'm just saying 9 to 10, but it should be a short meeting, just focusing on the two reports then, to make sure that we process them. I'll request members that when you receive the report, please do read those reports. If there are issues which you can raise earlier before you come to the meeting, do so that we start to work on some of the issues. Don't wait that we come to the meeting, because we have to finish Thursday. We don't have another day. Otherwise, we might postpone the debate, I suppose, because there will be no compliance in terms of the internal process of Parliament of tabling to the ATC and other related issues and so on. Thanks very much, members. SAPC, you see, the problem is that we expect the best from you. That's why the members are keep on probing and doing all these things, or even saying they don't trust SAPC. But we are number two in terms of the most trusted organization in the country, and political parties are number 7 or 9 in terms of being trusted by the public. So, but I'm just saying, continue doing your work. You seem to be stable. There will be challenges and so on. Thanks very much, members. We are done for today. We'll meet Thursday. As I